Hello and welcome to the Licensed and Queer podcast, where we're on a mission to uncover why James Bond appeals so much to LGBTQ plus people. Why not see 007 from a different angle?
Hello everyone, this is our month in Bond, and we are being a bit bad. This is our month in Bond for August and September 2023, because we just were really busy during the early part of September.
Yeah, we haven't really got an excuse.
No.
Apart from, we have.
I opened a multi-million pound light rail scheme, so I do have an excuse. What's your excuse?
Organising James Bond Club events.
There you go. We had excuses.
Okay, we've got excuses.
We've got excuses. So, August, the end of August was really busy, so we didn't do a month in Bond for August, but we're here and we've combined it with August and September. And then, to be honest, August, because we went away on a little mini break, there weren't many Bond things in that.
No.
That we could think about. Bombay Sapphire Distillery, like, Bond almost killed Jim. We could do a tangential link.
Yeah, that is a really tangential link. So Bond choosing to drink vodka in the movies did kind of put the nail in the coffin of Jim's popularity.
Destroyed Jim until Bombay Sapphire came back and put a nice bottle.
You're right, but we went to Warship Down Country, essentially, which is not very Bondian.
Has Bond ever killed a rabbit?
Almost certainly at some point, yeah. But yeah. Yeah, so yeah, Hampshire and Wiltshire,
and Stonehenge.
Oh, no, but there is. I've just thought in one of the Anthony Horowitz novels, I think it's Trigger Mortis, there is a sequence set in a Stonehenge like place some ceremonial.
That would
stones.
Be very, that would feel very like
Pussy Galore is bound naked in the middle of them.
Oh, wowzers.
Yeah,
do they have sex at the end of it?
No. That's Pussy Glory's unequivocally a lesbian.
In Anthony Horowitz.
In Anthony Horowitz's
that's very
book.
Good.
Yeah.
So we were very busy with having sex in stone circles and stuff during
no,
August.
Delete that bit. we definitely did not.
So we had a very busy September, and there's quite a lot of Bond things in that. So we're doing our month in Bond podcast again. Quick thing that I want to mention straight away, obviously, I'm Anthony Lobagelis. This is David Lobagelis, MBE.
I'm sure they know that.
One thing that is not Bond related at all, but I made it Bond related, is one of the reasons why we're too busy is I was playing Starfield, the video game that is on Xbox and is about like space. But one thing that made it Bond related is I stole a spaceship at one point. And I renamed it Moonraker.
Oh, you didn't tell me that.
No, I showed you the picture of it because you said it looked very phallic.
Oh, yes. No, I do remember. Yes, it was very, in the tradition of You Only Live Twice, very phallic spaceship.
Yeah, so it was like I've got another spaceship I stole now, and I named that after the X-Jet. I called it the Blackbird. So I named both my spaceships after my favourite media properties. But yeah, so one of the reasons, there was literally a weekend in very early September when we were going out with our friends, and they were like, where's Anthony? And I was like, I'm not coming because I'm playing Starfield.
So I basically said to them, Anthony's in space, he won't be joining us.
Yeah, so I didn't do that. But yeah, we had, August was a bit sort of light on Bond stuff, other than had a few really good articles that went on License of Queer. You did another
Queer Review for the first time in over 6 months, because Skyfall, to be honest, took it out of me.
Yeah.
And Thunderball ended up being far more kind of in-depth than I'd originally envisioned. So that
went on in August. And
it turned out well, though, I think.
Yeah, very
really
good.
Nice feedback.
And you've also had a couple of articles go up. You had your interview with... did you interview with Raymond Benson?
Yeah. So ahead of the Pinewood event at the end of October, the Bond Stars event, I'm trying to get to know each of the Bond authors.
Yeah.
And I've managed to do that for the vast majority. And we had a really nice chat. Also, because Zero Minus 10 is being re-released, when we're recording this, it's released in a few days' time, which I know we'll talk about those in a bit. Yeah, so really nice chat with Raymond. He's such a nice guy, honestly. And those books were so...
I love Zero Minus. I know I haven't read it all, but like, I've read like half of Zero Minus 10 when we were going on holiday to Hong Kong.
It's so much fun, those books.
It's so much fun. And it feels like I can see how that sort of had influence or took influence from Bond in the 90s. Like, it felt like a symbiotic relationship.
It is, and that we talked about that in the interview, that he was asked to incorporate some of the film elements into the book, but he wanted to keep Fleming's Bond.
He writes the novelizations of the...
He wrote the novelizations of Tomorrow Never Dies, World Tonight, Die Another Day as well, yeah.
And you've read Die Another Day when we went to Cuba, didn't you?
I did. I took Die Another Day when we went to Cuba.
Yeah. So, that. And then you've also got a couple of articles that have gone on the website from Craig that are really good.
Craig Gent has written two really great articles. One on masculinity, which whether his thoughts sparked up by watching the Barbie movie.
Yeah.
And the other one is about his adoration of Cara Milovi, who he actually got to meet at the Belfry event.
And that was a big thing in September. So that was where our next thing we're going to talk about. But one of the massive things that happened in September is we had a 007 GB club event at the Belfry in the West Midlands, which is really convenient for us.
It was, yeah.
Because it was just up the road for us. We're like 15, 20 minutes away from where we live. And that was such a fun event. It was a mixture of golf for those who wanted to play golf, afternoon tea and chatting with Bond girls and Bond stars. And you did talk about golf and the importance of golf in Fleming's James Bond.
Yeah. So some of that is already on the 007 GB YouTube channel.
Oh,
the little snippet of each of the different presentations. And Mark Waldridge, the amazing Mark, is going to put more of that footage online over the coming weeks and months. Because it was such a packed day, wasn't it? There was so much going on.
It was a really fun event. I thought it was really well planned from the fact that there's lots of different types of Bond fans. And like one of our friends, Bo Back, I thought it was really cool that he'd never played golf before, but decided, I'm going to play golf today because Bond and golf go together and I want to try something new. And I think that's really fun.
Yeah,
and
then
other of us, we just sat there drinking like cocktails and champagne and like having afternoon tea and chatting with Bond stars.
It was just nice to be in an informal atmosphere with, you know, obviously we had 9 Bond girls, which is no mean feat.
Including
Mayim Debo.
Yeah, who was like so fun to be there.
Yeah.
And there was a Q&A session with all the Bond girls. She was very vocal herself, talking about her experiences, along with the other Bond girls who we've met at other events. And then there was John Glenn as well, was there again. And he talked about, we had a retrospective on his career, and he gave some thoughts about getting into his career. And it was really interesting hearing about, like, basically, he sort of got into film editing because he was a messenger boy for a film company. But one day he was walking past the editing room and it smelt like pear drops.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what drew him into the editing world. Mm-hmm. And that's so cool. Mm-hmm. Like, such an interesting story. So that was all really good fun.
We had John Marino and Paul Weston as well.
Yeah.
Who were fantastic. We had a really nice conversation with them the day before, didn't we? Before the main event.
Yeah. And
really nice.
We had an auction where lots of money was raised for UNICEF. And I got
You got the signed Octopussy sweatshirt
with 4 signatures on with all of the Bond girls who are in Octopussy.
We forgot to get John to sign it.
Yeah, I need to get
next time we see
next
him.
Next time we see him, he needs to sign it.
We'll ask him to
sign
it.
But yeah, so that was a fantastic event. That was one thing I think was really good for that event is that you didn't need to just be... It was open for everyone, even if you weren't a member of the fan club. You could
quite a few
get
people
tickets.
Actually joined on that day as well.
That's
though,
so good.
Because they weren't members, but they decided to kind of come to one of the events. And although it wasn't necessarily on the page, you know, on the scale of HMS Belfast, it was a really brilliant event for something that was, you know, there were just so many different bits to it. And so many people have said that they didn't get to everything again on the day.
The food was incredible.
The
as well.
Food was incredible.
Oh, I think about those croque monsieur.
Oh, yeah, the croque monsieur. Honestly, it was mouth-watering food. And we've got another event coming up. The next one's on the 2nd of December.
Yeah.
So that's going to be
a Christmas social.
Yeah. The as we're recording this, the events, the full details haven't been announced. They should be by the time this goes out later today.
Cool. So one thing we mentioned when we talked about that stuff earlier is you talked about the Zero Minus Ten and new covers. Do you want to talk about those?
So it's Global James Bond Day in a few days' time.
I'm thinking we might be getting the now the strike's over. Maybe we'll get the James Bond announcement.
I've said this myself to a few people that I think we will get some form of announcement, but you know, we'll see. I'll happily eat my hat if I'm wrong.
I think that with the so much of sort of production in Hollywood, like Disney have pushed films back. It's been so pushed back. I think it would be a really positive sign of like things are getting back to normal in terms of production, and it's no skin off Eon's nose because they weren't that far along anyway. So I think it would be a really positive thing if they announced next week who the James Bond is.
Yeah, they'd need a title and a director at that point. Well, maybe not a title, but definitely a director by that point. So that'll be interesting.
Who do you think might direct it?
Anyone but Christopher Nolan.
Greta.
No, I love Christopher Nolan films, as you know, but I think he'd be a terrible Bond
director. It'd just be really loud. Greta Gerwig.
I think it will be someone. I don't think it'll be an auteur. I don't think it'll be someone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea, to be honest. Directors, even harder to call them an actor.
So, that's next week. But on one of the things that we know is happening on Global James Bond Day is Ian Fleming Publications are re-releasing three books.
So we've got, as you've said, Zero Minus Ten with the new Raymond Benson introduction,
which is like the first of the Raymond Benson books, which is set around the handing back of Hong Kong, and has some similarly Fleming-esque, quite sort of hard to get through
Mahjong bits. Yeah, you don't really need to know. Raymond Benson actually learned Mahjong in a weekend be able to write that sequence effectively. But yeah, I must admit, I don't really understand Mahjong.
Like
but
in the print, you've got lots of nice pictures of Mahjong tiles.
You get the tiles, absolutely. So all of the books have new introductions. So Raymond himself has done an introduction, kind of a truncated history of how he came to write the novels. So that's definitely worth picking up. And also the new cover is really nice. You've also got the John Pearson authorized biography with his son writing the introduction.
So this is as if James Bond was a real person.
It's a fiction book. So it's essentially a Bond novel, but it's written as if John Pearson is going to meet James Bond and James Bond tells his life story. So it kind of repeats some of the Fleming stories, but the connective tissue is all John Pearson's invention.
And then how did they ever, like, for people who might not know, where did they get the idea to do that book and, like, back in the day?
Well, John Pearson became friends with Fleming, and I think they worked on the same newspaper together. It is there in the introduction, actually, because I've had some advanced copies, which is nice. So I've been able to read the instructions. So John Pearson's son writes about their friendship, and obviously it was published after Fleming's death. But Pearson was the first person to write a biography of Fleming himself. So then he wrote the biography of Bond a few years later.
Oh, cool. Well, I think that's very good. And we earlier in the summer, the Easter that happened in August, we went to the house that was James Bond's house based from that publication.
Yeah, there's a couple of candidates for James Bond's house, but John Pearson places it at that part of Mayfair that we went to.
Yeah,
in Chelsea.
And there's a nice little sort of garden in the middle of the street, and we did look a bit weird because as we were like looking at it, they were coming out the house who lived there, and we're going somewhere, and we didn't want to look like, oh, do you know you live in James Bond's house? Can we go in, please? But yeah, so we didn't do that. And then the third book is
Colonel Sun,
which is, I really like Colonel Sun in terms of its sort of outlook, and that is the first post-Fleming Bond novel written by Kingsley Amis, writing as
Robert Markham.
But this time on the cover, it just says Kingsley Amis.
It does. It says Robert Markham on the inside. But the introduction for this one is written by Anthony Horowitz.
Oh, cool. And they've all got really similar sort of minimalist white covers. but they are they're clearly in a style. I don't know if you know, is this like Ian Fleming Publications going to publish more using this style?
I don't think so. Or is this for just for this, you know, for James Bond Day. Yeah. So
they're very nice covers.
They are,
And they've got a really good like sort of visual style that's comparative across the three of them.
Quite stark, aren't they?
We were going to carry on with some other stuff, but first, David, we need a cocktail.
We do. I'm thinking, what should we make? Should we make the most recent new cocktail on the License Square website?
Yeah.
So we're going to make a Cara Milovi. I think the ice machine's doing its business. Yep. You might be able to hear in the background. Back in a sec.
So this is, what's the cocktail again?
Cara Milovi.
Cara Milovi, and what is in it?
So, Cara Milovi.
Is it on?
To adapt slightly, because we haven't actually got a couple of the ingredients today. That's always the fun with cocktails.
It is in on the License to Queer website. Have you written it off?
I will by the time this goes out.
It's on Instagram,
it'll be in the cocktail section. Yeah. It's in the Instagram, on Instagram, yeah. So, we are talking, the base ingredient is Slivovitz, which is plum brandy from Czechoslovakia. So, obviously, Cara is from Czechoslovakia.
Czechia.
And there's also, so three measures of that. This is to make two of them. One measure of limoncello, of course, just to adjust your measures depending on
because
how many drinks.
Because of the cello. Because
yeah.
Cara plays the cello.
I think we've made that awful pun. Cello. Work, yeah. And then
just this cello.
And then we've also got a bit of Lady Rose water in here.
Because they go to Morocco.
More because the cello is called the Lady Rose.
And they also go to Marrakesh.
Yeah, and they also go to Marrakesh. And, you're right, Morocco. Somewhere in Morocco.
We go to Tangiers.
Tangier, that's it. And then instead of lemon juice today, we've actually got lime juice because we've used all the lemons.
We had lamb for dinner and I used the lemon for the lamb.
You did, but I'll forgive you. And then we've got also some dashes of Angostura bitters. The ingredient we don't have is
egg white
or its substitute, Aquafaba, which actually is better, which uses essentially cheap pea juice. But we can live without that. Do
why
you want to have a taste?
The,
see if it makes.
What the other ingredients? Why are that vague?
Why are they related to Cara Milovi?
Yeah, is it just
it's the Czech brandy?
Yeah,
it's the cello in the name of limoncello, and then obviously you've got the rose. And then, to be honest, I just kind of played around with the lemon and bitters until it worked. Does it work with the lime?
Yeah, really.
Do you think it's on a par or better or not quite as good?
I tasted one last week, so I can't say.
Oh no, you were off. But
I was poorly last week.
That might even be better than the lemon version, to be honest.
I prefer drinks with lime. It's a bit, they're a bit sharper.
Yeah, it's really nice.
So another plug again for the articles on License to Queer about Cara, including which I started to read today.
Mm.
Craig's piece about why she's the star of that movie rather than James Bond.
I know you're not a fan. With the elephant in the room is you're not a huge fan of Living Daylights.
And we tried to watch it again last week. Even after meeting
her. You can't get past Dalton, can you?
No.
He just feels like too cosplay. Much someone kind of putting on a performance as Bond rather than...
And particularly a performance of like, this is like everyone has become before me. I'm going to do the... Because he's such a Shakespearean actor. Mm. I'm going to go back to the original text.
Yeah,
I see
the sacred text.
I see that, and I. There's little fun, particularly when you come straight from A View to a Kill to that.
See, while I vehemently disagree, it's interesting to hear different points of view. It's quite interesting. Quite a few people I know have kind of tried to do a bit of a Living Daylights viewing with their partners recently, especially because
we've met
Maya Dabbo, John Glenn.
Do you know what I hadn't realised until I read Craig's article today?
Go on.
Quite how much her character might be dependent on the AIDS crisis and the fact that Bond could only have one female partner the entire film.
That's...
because obviously the safe sex, not sleeping around kind of stuff. Mm. And I hadn't ever considered that before. And it's when I know that and I see that like because I mentioned, I always get, is it Mary Sue or Mary Jane? I always get it wrong.
Mary Sue is kind of the character who's like,
can do everything. I can understand why, like, when it feels that she can do everything.
Yeah.
Like, she's a cellist who can snipe and, like...
But she can't snipe, that's the whole point.
Yeah, but she... Enough to, like, I couldn't do what she does.
She doesn't know one end of the rifle from the other, as Bond says.
But I can see how that is a result of, well, Bond can't have more than one female partner in this movie, so she has to
be
all aspect of... Like, the closest she gets to someone else is the Barry Manilow collection.
Miss Moneypenny, yeah. Oh, there's Linda at the start on the yacht.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that is, there is two. And she's
but you're right, it does subvert the formula because there are fewer women. It basically is just Kara.
And he only has, he only has sex with Kara once.
Yes, at the end.
Yeah.
We presume they do.
Yeah.
So, rather just some heavy petting.
Yeah. And I think that was really interesting. And that's why, like, she's so central to the entire film.
Because
even later films, like the one that I feel very similar, The World Is Not Enough. There's two Bond girls, like, good and bad and all that kind of stuff. Same with Tomorrow Never Dies. But this one, there's just, like, it's just her. And, like, you can't really count the lady before. She's really funny, but the lady on the yacht.
Yeah, Linda,
she gets a couple of lines, and that's it.
Won't you join me?
It's like tennis.
It's all playboys and tennis pros. I need a real man.
That's such a good
I love thing. It.
I want an event on a yacht.
Yeah.
We can do
that. Okay, yeah, we need to plan that.
We'll talk about holidays in a second. We're going to do a little bit of a big thing happened yesterday. As we're recording, it is the last day of September, the 3rd of September. Yesterday, perhaps since the first time since 2012... a new full James Bond video game came out.
2012, the last one.
Yeah, there were some like DLC aspects of Forza, but the last one was 007 Legends, which apparently
was terrible. Awful. Apparently,
yeah, that was on Wii U as well as other consoles. But that was supposed to be terrible. But a new Bond video game came out yesterday called Cypher, 007 Cypher, or Cypher
007.
And that's exclusive right now to Apple Arcade, which means if you pay $4.99 a month to...
Which you do already.
I have a bundle where I get that Apple Music and Apple TV, which works a bit cheaper. You can play it on any Apple device you have. So iPhone, iPad, which I'm playing it on, MacBook, which David's playing it on, or Apple TV.
Yeah.
And it's got lots of different control methods. I started to try and play it using touch controls, and then I was like, I'm not Tallulah. I can't play using touch controls like she plays Minecraft.
Oh, our niece, yeah.
Yeah.
So our seven-year-old niece is very good at playing everything on an iPad.
Yeah, and I'm like, it drives me crazy. So I connected a gamepad to it, and it's much better. And you did the same
with a PlayStation controller.
So we're going to talk about it very generally here. If you don't want to hear spoilers, because we recognise it is only out yesterday.
Both of us have played the first chapter. There are
half
two,
the game.
Half the release game. So we are going to do plot spoilers at the end of this episode, but we're going to talk more generally now.
Yeah, so essentially it's a mobile game. The good thing about Apple Arcade is anything that you can play on Apple Arcade, you can play without any microtransactions, because one of the things about mobile games is they're often blighted by microtransactions.
Oh, right, okay.
There's none of that in this.
Yeah.
So you can play it right now. Like I said, it's $4.99 a month, and there is a 1 month free trial for Apple Arcade. So if you wanted to try, you could.
Right.
And so far, there's 20 levels in two chapters. And the developer, Tipping Point, have tweeted, and they've talked about the release yesterday, to say that, like, they're adding content to it, like, over the next couple of months, so that the story will continue to evolve. And it's a isometric action RPG, I would say. Very much, it feels to me
I just
like,
about know what that means.
It so feels
for
like
people
Link,
who aren't massive gamers.
It feels like Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past.
Yeah.
Meets the stealth elements of Metal Gear Solid,
which I've never played, but yeah,
and with a fun story, visual novel aspect to it as well, with where You
bit like kind of Telltale Games, yeah, sort yeah. of style.
Although you don't have to make the choices in Telltale there are Games. No choices, yeah. really. Are so, but it's and visually it's really striking. The graphics are really good.
Yeah,
the controls are really fun once you get into
it. If you're playing with a control, I can't imagine playing it on a keyboard or touch controls. To be honest, I had to use a game controller, but that might be because I'm old.
But
young people might be okay.
I think it's really.
Yeah.
I think it's the developer deserves some kudos into making all these different control methods. Because you started to play it on keyboard.
Yeah.
I played it on touch controls. Then you started playing it on mouse. And then finally we got onto the.
And then when I put it on the PlayStation, it did then come up with the PlayStation keys.
No PlayStation. You use the PlayStation controller.
That's what I mean. Sorry. When I was playing the PlayStation controller, it did come up with the buttons on the screen for that, which I thought was pretty clever.
The graphics are really good. The music is very, very good.
Music's astounding, the music's actually. Really it's good. Quite Tom Newman-ish, but yeah, so it doesn't have like the big brassy blariness of David Arnold, but that's probably because, I'm trying not to veer into spoiler territory, but a lot of the levels that we played, the first half of the game is quite MI6 building heavy, so it's kind of Skyfall Spectre-ish. So I don't want to say too much, but I imagine as we go through the game, we'll talk more about this in the spoiler section, but as we go through the game, we're going to get quite a variety of different musical styles, and I'll leave it there.
Yeah. In terms of the activities, each level, you have an overall action you need to do, and it's mainly sneaking. It's interesting we play it in different ways. I'm not very good at stealth games. I don't have the patience to just wait. So I'm enjoying being Daniel Craig Bond, being a blunt instrument and just finding people and punching them out. And you're actually
I'm a bit more dullish.
You're hiding in like
yeah.
And then like choking them and taking it that way. So it's really good fun that way. The little things you can do in each of the levels to get better sort of scores in terms of looking for intel. And as you get through the game, the more sort of intel you do and you can replay levels, because it is a mobile game, so they're built on the fact that you replay and get better and better. You can upgrade your weapons and gadgets, and you can also unlock other costumes. And there's some cool costumes there from Bond films.
So we'll talk about that in the spoiler bit perhaps, but for me, that's the element of the game which I'm like, I don't really know what's going on, because I don't play it. I don't think I've ever played a mobile game before of any kind. I think I played Angry Birds about 15 years ago. So that was about it. But I don't really get the RPG, because I don't play that anywhere near as many games as you do, the RPG elements, all the upgrades and that kind of thing. So for me, I'm just about kind of understanding that bit, but you could pretty much go through the entire game without bothering about that anyway, I think.
Yeah, because I'm like, because they reward you. If you do better at the stealth stuff, you get more like intel points, which you can use to upgrade your stuff. Because I'm like, literally, I walk around the corner and someone sees me and I punch them
and shoot them.
Yeah. I get fewer points for that. Where you, who don't get seen, you end the level with a massive bonus for not getting seen. So I don't think I'll ever get the things to unlock the costumes. Because I'm not getting that. Because at the end of every level, if you do okay, you get some intel.
Yeah.
If you do amazing, you get some blueprints. And if you do exceptional, you get like something even better than that. And that's what you use as currency to unlock them.
For people who don't play games at all, do you think it'd be accessible?
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
It's on Apple stuff now, which means probably exclusive for 6 months. So I would imagine by April next year, it'll be on Android and other platforms. This something like this could easily copy across to something like Switch. It reminds me a lot of years ago, there was an isometric Tomb Raider game, and it feels very much like that. And that just come to Switch years after. So I think it will come to other consoles eventually. But the positive thing about that is because the developer Tipping Point Games have said that they're adding content to it every couple of months, I imagine that by the time it comes to Android, you'll get that full experience. Right. Where we're just getting, like, we're halfway through the game now. We've just done the prologue, basically.
Yeah.
So in ten missions time, when we've done all the content is, I think it'll end in a cliffhanger.
Is it actually going to be 10 missions?
The ten. Yeah.
See, for me, and again, I'm not going to spoil anything, but for me, the game could theoretically go on a lot longer than that.
Well, they're going to add more. Like, every 2 months, they're going to add another, like, 20 missions.
If it's really successful,
they're going to keep just
adding. They might go even longer than that.
Yeah, because it's so referential to Bond history.
We'll talk more candidly at the end of this episode, but I think that the game...
I was very shocked when it referenced Bond stuff.
Yeah.
You can tell it's made by Bond fans.
It's made by Bond fans. There are so many Easter references.
Eggs. Not even Easter eggs, but overt things to, like... Wouldn't it be cool if, like, explored this?
Yeah. So, and so many different eras of Bond. Yeah. You know, you said about 007 Legends. For me, it's almost like this is what 007 Legends was trying to do.
Yeah. Just as a, well, I think, really cool, if you look at the sort of art for the app when it loads in, it's very much like that version of James Bond that they've modelled it on is Sean Connery. And then when you play the game, the Bond is very much like
Fleming's Bond, to be honest. James Bond, it's kind of the closest we've ever had to a Hoagie Carmichael type Bond. In visually speaking, it's quite like 1940s, 1950s retro looking Bond.
And then we won't talk about any of the characters, but there's a really cool thing about the other characters which make me think, like, oh, this is such a cool idea for a story. Which we'll talk about once we get, like, because you don't realise what's going on until chapter 10, even, I don't think.
No, possibly. Even though it is, I suppose, nostalgic in a way, the story does feel quite fresh. Yeah. And I know it's kind of a sort of framing, I can't, no, we'll talk about this in the spoilers,
but, like, there's a lot of disparaging things you can say about video, like, mobile games.
Yeah,
mobile games actually are really good now. I play a lot of mobile games that are really brilliant. Like, I started playing Honkai Star Rail this week with that Chinese game, and it's really, really good. And so many people think bad about mobile games because it's not PlayStation or Xbox or Nintendo, but that's just the future. And this company, Tipping Point Games, have clearly love the they love James Bond. And they've created such a cool gameplay loop and such a great story that I'm really excited to see where it goes next. And it makes me exceedingly excited for IO Interactive's game. We haven't seen anything of yet, because the Hitman people, like, Hitman is such a fantastic game. They're such amazing developers. So if this company that I knew nothing about in terms of Tipping Point can do something this amazing with a license, what can something on the, if you think about something like an art house film and a blockbuster film, if sort of like a blockbuster game developer can make something with James Bond, I'm very excited for that. But this Tipping Point game is actually incredible.
I think it's really good. I think, what are we talking about, three and a half hours for the 10 chapters we've played so far each? So it's definitely
very forgiving, isn't it, as well?
The difficulty curve is kind of perfect.
They don't teach you how the different controls work. You have to work work it out yourself, don't you? But, like, if you die, you get to start pretty much at the same point where you left off. So, like, it is
mostly like a puzzle game rather than it's got a lot of action in it as well.
Although I say it's forgiving when if you die you start, you do realise that if you die,
you lose the points. You can't buy stuff.
You can't buy the clothes.
Like cool outfits.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll talk about, we'll have a spoiler
in a few minutes when we finish talking about everything else.
Yeah.
What else have we got to go, Anthony?
Last thing is, James Bond has been to Venice 3 times, and we are about to go to Venice in a month or two's time for our 3rd time. And this was not a Bond film that we saw that made us want to go to it. It was a Hercule Poirot Agatha Christie film, but it did star a Bond girl. So we went to see Haunting in Venice.
which was surprisingly brilliant
and also surprisingly terrifying. Fucking scary. I didn't think it's going to be a horror movie.
Thank you for swearing on License Queer. That's the first F-bomb we've ever had, darling.
There we go. I didn't think it was going to be as scary as it was. Like, I think there must be people who going to see, because they've seen Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile.
Yeah.
And they're going to see this because, like, oh, Haunting in Venice, like, oh, I like Poirot, and it is legitimately scary.
Yeah.
Don't you think? Like, there'll be old dears who go and see this and get terrified.
Yeah, I can imagine. In fact, the screening we went into, which was an IMAX screening just a week after the release, there were some people in there who, you know, only go to the cinema like once a year.
Like those,
like for Bond movies or for, you know, big event movies like this. And you could see
Downton Abbey the movie.
And I'm sure they were absolutely loving it, but it's not the kind of cozy experience that the previous two films might have let you in for.
Like, the Murder on the Orient Express isn't particularly cozy, no, they're all killing.
They're sort of languorously paced. They're about 2 hours 15, 2 hours 20. This is like an hour and 40-ish. And it's quite, there's absolutely no fat on this film at all.
And there's no, like, they're like the Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile that have those beautiful landscapes. You see a little bit of like
it's not
second
shot,
unit
yeah,
in Venice.
It's not,
but it's all in this horrible, dirty,
palazzo.
Decrepit palazzo.
Yeah, it's not kind of shot on the same scale, which doesn't mean to say it's not. It's the best one of the three. Oh, by a long shot. It's by far the most visually interesting of the three films and the most compelling. It's and performed and everything else. There's not that kind of layer like the Nile one had of this kind of arch kind of campness, which puts you at a bit of a distance. I mean, my favourite Agatha Christie adaptation is Evil Under the Sun, directed by Guy Hamilton,
yeah,
of course, famous
really?
For directing Bond movies.
Did he direct that one?
Yeah, yeah. So that's my favourite. So I love a bit of Camp Christie. Yeah.
There's some camp bits in this
Oh
one.
My God,
like,
it's sublimely
camp,
like some of the deaths.
Michelle...
No,
I wasn't going
anything.
To spoil
okay,
that.
Okay.
Michelle Yeoh
plays
a medium.
Yeah.
And there's a really funny line about, like, she calls herself a medium because, like, she's not, like... I forget what it is, but basically she's not like large, she's not small, she's right there in the centre.
There are some lines which are really kind
and
of...
Tina Fey is the other main character, and she's fantastic in it. And when I saw Tina Fey was in it, I was like, oh, is that going to work?
Yeah, it does.
Jamie Dornan, he's in it.
Yeah.
And obviously Kenneth Branagh. It's Kenneth Branagh's best performance of Poirot.
By a long shot.
I feel like the last couple of ones has been a bit him being cosplay.
But he's only done three. I actually enjoyed Murder on the Orient Express. Death on the Nile, not so much.
Mm.
And this one is heads and shoulders above those two.
It's really, really fun. And it's a lesson note. I found the other two, because they were such famous Agatha Christie novels, even if you'd not seen this, you kind of knew where it was going to go.
Mm.
Whereas Halloween Party is one of her, which is what this one's based on, is one of her lesser known and actually quite...
Is it not as well regarded?
No, not at all. It's one of her later novels. I was talking to my friend Jess about it in the week, and she was saying, I didn't know what it was. And I was like, oh, it's based on Halloween Party. She's like, that takes place in a manor house in England.
Yeah,
and I was
different.
Like, okay, a bit different. But it's kind of the same in the fact that it's just a palazzo.
Mm.
We're just in a manor house in Venice, basically. And they don't use Venice as a... They don't use Venice.
I don't know.
What do you think?
Yeah, some of the manors of the deaths.
Oh, yeah,
yeah.
I suppose that's there.
Yeah.
But, yes, but anyway, long story short, we saw that. We knew we wanted to go away at Christmas. And then 24 hours after we saw that film, we were like, let's go to Venice for Christmas.
We
booked a holiday to Venice.
A day later.
So we're going to go to Venice for Christmas this year, which will be lovely. Hopefully there'll be no murders in palazzos, unless we're solving them. That will be fun. But
I can think of more relaxing ways to spend a Christmas break, darling.
Yeah. But... So we are going to have our, not a haunting, like a festive, what would you say? I need another word.
A slaying.
A slaying.
Sorry.
Oh, that's better. A slaying.
Yeah, yeah. It works in so many ways. Santa, queer slang.
Yeah. So That is the end of this podcast. We are going to carry on in a second.
I just, if people are listening to this in the first few days after it's released, there is a Regent Street Cinema screening of Casino Royale coming up a week today. It's the 7th of October. So it's for Global James Monday, but at more sociable time because Thursdays are not that sociable for a lot of people.
I don't work Thursdays.
You don't work Thursdays. It would work perfectly for you, but not for a lot of people. So I know a lot of people who follow License to Queer and listen to this podcast already got tickets to go to that. I know not everyone can make it, but yeah. So Central London, Regent Street Cinema. It's me and six other massive fans of Casino Royale, including Kim Sherwood and Charlie Higson and Monica Germana, who's an amazing academic.
I've never watched Casino Royale 1967.
No, funny. It's definitely the 2006 version. I mean, I'd love the 67 version, but I'm sure not everyone would be as adoring as me. So if you want to come along, I'm looking forward to having a chat with people before and after the screening. We'll be introducing the film, giving our perspective on it. And there was a glass of Prosecco thrown in with the cinema ticket as well.
Oh,
all the drinks being served. So that's what we're doing next Saturday.
Yes, we are. And if you want to interact with us, you can find us on Instagram X, which still feels really weird to say, which is Twitter.
I'm still calling it Twitter.
Obviously over on licensetoqueer.com. And we'll be back at the end of October, be more timely, with our month in Bond for October. But if you want to carry on after the break, yeah, we'll be talking more about Cypher 007.
Do you need refilling?
Of course I do. So I was...
That's the last of the cocktail.
Getting straight into spoiler territory for Cypher 007. I was bowled over in the second mission. The first mission is a prologue in the Swiss Alps, and you get knocked out and you wake up in Bond's flat, which has a pretty much sort of like similar kitchen to it in Live and Let Die. I was like,
it's more Live and Let Die than it is Spectre. And I think it's worth saying at this point, these are the spoilers.
Yeah.
So this is like every version of Bond.
Yeah.
Cinematic Bond so far, although as I say, Bond himself looks more like the novel Bond. Cinematic Bond squished together. Weird. So I always say Bond is like a palimpsest. You can see all the previous versions showing through.
Yeah.
Like a wax tablet where you haven't kind of managed to get rid of all the previous versions. This has taken, and it's confirmed in like the first 5 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you messaged me. You started playing this
while I thought it was a prequel to GoldenEye, because right in the first mission, Bond's gone on this mission to take down Spectre. It's gone awry. He got drugged and wakes up in his own bed and was like, what the hell's gone on? And then suddenly your door gets burst in and Alec Trevelyan is taking you in for treason. And I'm like, oh my God, this is a prequel to GoldenEye. And we're going to see how Alec is actually a double agent all this time working for Spectre. And you kind of, that is the case. But then as it goes on, they throw in all these other different versions of Bond. Like the person who's helping you through all the missions to get through is Moneypenny. And that's Eve Moneypenny from the
Daniel
Craig.
Yeah.
She's a person of colour. You can tell she used to be an agent because later on when you complete Mission 10, they're like, she's going to be your field operative who helps you.
Yeah, she's essentially your handler. Yeah. She's actually like double or nothing.
Yeah.
And Moneypenny's basically in charge.
And then later on you meet Q, but it's Desmond Llewellyn Q. Yeah. So it doesn't match with Eve.
No.
So it's they're mixing that. And then the woman who plays Eve is like,
he's nothing like
she's just a woman.
She's just a grey-haired woman. Interesting-looking version of the character. So,
and there's a cool mission in Q branch where there's loads of Easter eggs where it's like that you killed someone using the jetpack from
Thunderball. Yeah, but also in Q's lab, you have the boat from World Is Not Enough, you have the Lotus, you have the husk of the Aston Martin before it's reconditioned after Skyfall.
And all of the missions are very much, so a lot of the missions feel very much around Skyfall Spectre, where you're escaping through the underground. There's a really cool mission where you're having to dodge underground trains, and getting through the. And then there's a whole scene when you're going through the 00 section, and you like you go into the room where you have the Agent Provocateur psychological meeting. Yeah. There's the place where Silver's, Bond does the prison is there. Bond goes in the you go past the gym machines that Bond uses to test his fitness. It's also
swimming
cool.
pools.
The swimming pools,
which I don't think you did. I jumped in the swimming pool.
I didn't know you could do that.
And stealth attacked people from underneath the water.
And then it came up that you had like an oxygen bar.
So there aren't any swimming pools in the movies, but there is a scene in Skyfall, obviously, where Bond goes into that swimming pool in Shanghai, which I suppose that's especially cool. So, and so far, that's kind of only spoilers for the first few bits. We've only played the first 10 missions.
Which is half the game 20, so far.
So half the game really so far. But this is the big spoiler for the end of the 10th mission. So it turns out some or all of
Trevelyan is a villain, you have to take him out.
But some or all of this is taking place in James Bond's head.
Because he's been programmed by Spectre to be a double agent.
To bring out his bad side, essentially. So it's not quite clear yet, and I think it will come clearer by the end of the second set of missions.
And that works why, like, all of the people don't fit. Like, why it's Eve Moneypenny, but Desmond Llewellyn Q.
Yeah, because they're all the different versions. They don't fit together. So it's quite a clever way of doing almost like a best of Bond and having all those different versions. It's easy. It is a bit verging on, and I know I'm a bit tired of them, but it's a bit like the James Bond multiverse of madness. Because we've got all these different configurations of Bond in one.
And then Judi Dench is saying to James Bond, the only way you can break yourself of their programming is to rediscover who you are. So we haven't played it yet, but the 11th mission is like, go back to... Like,
you only live twice
in Japan.
But you only live twice in the film, which will be really interesting. So I presume all 10 missions...
They're going to be a different movie.
No, I think they'll all be You Only Live Twice.
Oh, really?
I think they'll all be.
But I know Jaws is in there. So
maybe
like
we get Jaws in Japan. I don't know.
Yeah, but like because they show we see Blofeld in the first 10 missions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've seen
a spoiler. Donald Pleasance version.
And I've seen from stuff that Tipping Point had put out, they talk about classic villains, and you see Jaws.
Okay.
So like, by the end of the 10th mission, you deal with Alec, he's gone. Which is a really fun mission. But like the next 10 are going to be rediscovering who you are. And basically you've got to reconnect with your past to deprogram yourself, which I think is going to be really fun. And now between each mission, you get to interact with Moneypenny M and Q and do your gadgets. So far, the gadgets you've got, which are quite cool, you've got the sunglasses from The World Is Not Enough. You've got this
cue ball,
which is like a cat toy.
Yeah.
to distract people.
Mostly.
And electric gun. Does Bond ever shoot a gun?
Well, this is the strange thing. So in the game we've played so far, there's actually no like real guns.
You can pick up real guns from the villains.
Yeah.
And then shotguns.
But they only last a couple of shots, don't they? So a part of me almost thinks it's playing into that. Kind of like, is this really in Bond's head or
like,
not?
Do you know, like,
it might change as the
game
goes
on. It reminds
me
like when Moneypenny's in the VR session.
Yeah, totally. Oh, actually, totally. It's very, very much like that.
We haven't used yet, but we've just got exploding cufflinks. Does that ever happen in Bond?
They're not. They're a tripwire cufflinks.
They're tripwire cufflinks,
which presumably it's like piano wire, like Donald.
Make you fall over.
Yeah, so we haven't got that far.
So, yeah, it's really fun. It's such a good story. And I don't want to say, like, for a mobile game, but, like, there's that disparaging thing about mobile games.
Well, I played it on my laptop
with the controller. But you can play it on an iPhone.
I don't know, God knows how. But it didn't.
But, you know, like,
feel
I'm playing
like
that Japanese, that Chinese game on my Xbox controller with my phone connected to it. You could play that.
Really?
Like this.
I couldn't.
With an iPhone. You want a big screen.
I like a big screen so I can see what's going on.
Yeah. The graphics are really good, though.
They are really good.
Yeah.
As I said earlier, the music, but it is really worth highlighting how fantastic the music is. It is interesting how aesthetically, so far, it does take a lot of inspiration from the latter half of Daniel Craig's films. But it'll be interesting to see as we go back to, like, the other films. We might, because we already know the next one takes place in a traditional Japanese village.
Yeah. The only thing I think that, in terms of, like, the things that you tick off, and that are very James Bond, the thing that I feel like it's missing so far are the girls. And I'm hoping you get some, like, Bond girl, like, team up with other characters. I don't want it, like, GoldenEye, where you've got to protect Natalia and she gets killed.
Well, there is a bit in the missions we've just done, the ninth mission, where we're Natalia, essentially, and we have to do something on a computer without getting shot.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's really tough. And then there's a bit where you have to... I just happen to do it quite easily, but there's a bit where you have to distract people so they don't break in the office and kill Moneypenny.
Yeah, I don't think they ever get through the door.
Oh, really?
I think it's a story.
Just like they can't get through.
Yeah.
If you took your time, they wouldn't get through that door.
I'm interested to see where it develops and if it does if it is essentially a compendium, and this is no problem with this whatsoever, a compendium of essentially the 25 Eon movies, and we kind of get the greatest hits of those.
Wouldn't it be
great
if each one was each chapter was a different movie?
Well, I'm hoping that's the case.
I don't think it will
be entirely just like Japan for the next segment.
Yeah, we'll have to see, but they are doing more. But I think it's for me, it's I've said for years Eon need to be doing more with a license, and this is a step in the right direction.
This will actually be maybe not quite to the same extent, I don't know, but the way GoldenEye was a lot of people's introduction into Bond, people about 10 years younger than us, who hadn't seen the films, that the game was like the gateway into the films. I think this game, I think you get a lot out of it if you're a massive Bond fan because of all the callbacks and everything else. But if you're not a James Bond fan already, this could turn you into one.
And I know it seems hyperbolic, but this is up there in terms of, for me, it's up there in GoldenEye in terms of the quality of the game. It's not just fun because it's James Bond. The gameplay loop is actually really fun.
It is.
It's fun to try and find the intel. It's fun to sneak past people or just punch them out or shoot your gun at them. And the location's really good. So for me, it's probably the best. I like Everything or Nothing, mainly for the Maya bits. But it is...
And the Max Zorin callback story.
But for me, it feels like the best James Bond video game since then. Well, since the late 90s.
I haven't played a video game in about a year.
This first game? What video game you played?
First game I played in about a year.
And you were hooked on it?
I started playing in bed this morning before I had to do something else. So I had about an hour. And then I played the rest of it in 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
It was really, really compelling.
Very good. So for you... If you heard it earlier, you'll know, but it's Cypher 007 is currently exclusive to Apple Arcade. You can play that if you subscribe to Apple Arcade, $4.99 a month in the UK, and you can play it on iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, and MacBook and Macs, and it's well worth your time.
Most definitely.
Bye-bye.